This is the Drive Podcast with Josh Graham.
Now you're talking my language.
You can hear the Drive weekday afternoons, 3 till 6 on WSJS.
We made it to a Friday Drive. It is WSJS, News Talk Sports for the Triad, where we've also made it to the final weekend of the college basketball regular season, and we'll have you covered for tomorrow's games. WD, Will Dalton, the executive producer of this show, he'll be at Clemson Wake Forest. I'll be at Duke Carolina and Durham. There will be YouTube content that you can only get on YouTube. So if you haven't already, make sure you are subscribed to our YouTube channel, searching The Drive with Josh Graham. Now on to the games. Forecasting round two of Duke Carolina is this simple for me. Can the Tar Heels recreate what they did in the Smith Center about a month ago when they visit Cameron tomorrow evening? That's the key question you should ask. And when you look at the box score from round one, it's very hard to imagine that kind of performance can be replicated while Carolina's on the road. Thus, Duke's going to win a close one. They're going to earn a season sweep. And here's why. Armando Bacot had 25-10-6.
Armando!
25-10-6 against Duke. The only other Tar Heel to ever have 25-10-5 against the Blue Devils. Long history, this rivalry. Very long time these two teams have been playing each other. Charlie Scott, 50-plus years ago. Also, good luck trying to go for 19 assists to 5 turnovers again. That type of ratio when facing this Duke defense. But keeping it with Armando.
Armando.
He was able to do that because Kyle Filipowski picked up 4 fouls. Good luck having Flip get in foul trouble again with the game being at Cameron. Plus, we've seen the late season emergence of Sean Stewart. He only played 6 minutes in the first meeting. He's going to play more than that tomorrow. He can add additional rim protection to help against Bacot. The Blue Devils defense also has a good answer for RJ Davis. We saw the strategy that was working pretty well in the first matchup. A lot of face guarding, but mostly it was Tyrese Proctor guarding RJ. Proctor held RJ Davis to 4 points in the first half of that game. You might not remember that because when you look at RJ's stat sheet, looks pretty good. 17 points on the game. It's a decent outing, but only 4 in the first half. What changed in the second half? Well, Tyrese Proctor got in foul trouble. Again, ask yourself, Carolina going into Cameron, is Tyrese Proctor and Kyle Filipowski both going to get in foul trouble again on their home court? Probably not. Is Tyrese Proctor again, given the way that he's been playing the last few games and Caleb Foster's absence, gonna be held to 2 points? Probably not. The Blue Devils have a good answer for RJ. It's unrealistic to expect a historical stat line being dropped again by Armando Bacot. And 19 assists to 5 turnovers. Good luck. Don't forget, John Shire, after the first game, he called out Duke's effort. I don't remember John Shire doing that after really any game his first 2 seasons as Duke's coach, but he did it after that game. I don't think I've ever heard a coach in the rivalry question effort. Here was John yesterday speaking to what he expects to see from his team effort-wise tomorrow.
You know, in this game, you know, it needs to be played at a – you need to be a high-level competitor in this game. It has to – That's why these games have been so memorable through the years. And you know, I didn't feel we lived up to that in the first game. And that's something for this group. That wasn't the only time where we've had a meeting or talked about a moment where we didn't play the level that we would want or I would want. And these guys have responded.
Duke wins the rematch tomorrow, 81-76. Let's go to WD, who's a Tar Heel fan on the matter. Do you have strong conviction about this game tomorrow?
Yeah, I got Carolina by 7.
Oof. Oof. Well, what did I say that you have strong disagreement with? If anything, if you think Carolina not only is going to win, but win by 7 points.
I think Armando's going to do it again.
Armando.
25-10-6.
I think he can have a game just like that again. Why not? I mean, we've seen him have
Not? Because it's only happened one other time in the history of this rivalry.
I think Armando's going to have a big day.
Okay.
I don't think it's that complicated.
All right. WD. Simplifying it. The human highlighter. We get out of the way whenever the human highlighter wants in. I don't want to mischaracterize the human highlighter, but he seems to be a Carolina fan whenever he calls in. So I have a feeling he's probably not on board with my Duke pick either. Am I right, human highlighter?
You are absolutely, finally, 100% correct on this. However, your opening statement, you're all wrong, Josh Graham. I agree with Will Dawn. Let me tell you something. This Carolina team is just that. We are a team. We're a team. We don't have to have one guy step up. We have it all the time. If Baycott doesn't have the same kind of game, that's okay. R.J. Davis, Cormac Ryan, one of the guys will step up and be huge in this game. We're playing at Cameron. So I understand what you said. I don't expect the Dukies to get in foul trouble. Oh, Lord, no, that's not going to happen in Cameron Indoor Stadium. Or should I say Hansbrough Indoor Stadium. Carolina is going to go in there, and they're going to get the sweep as Carolina can do. Because why? We are the better team. Understand. People look at talent. People look at this. People look at individual players. Look at this season as a whole. Carolina has had multiple players step up and have a huge game. Ingram, Baker, Davis, Ryan, name it. They will come through, and Carolina gets the W in Cameron once again. Woo! Highlight.
I do agree with them. Carolina, better team, the better team all year. Duke by 5. On X at WSJS Radio, if you want in, that's where we're streaming video in addition to YouTube and Twitch. While you're a Carolina fan, WD, it's no secret which in-state team I root for. The NHL's trade deadline will hit in less than an hour, and the Carolina Canes have already won the day. They leveled up from a team that was already top four in the Eastern Conference. A huge, huge day for the Canes. They added two lethal scores. Carolina, strong defensively. Great on the blue line. Not top 10 scoring team in the league. Jake Guentzel from Pittsburgh can fit that. He's a legit bona fide 40-goal scorer. To put that in perspective, 40 goals for those who don't follow hockey all that closely, here's the complete list of Carolina Hurricanes since the team moved from Hartford to Raleigh in 97, or I guess Greensboro first and then Raleigh. Here's the complete list of Carolina Hurricanes that have had 40 goals in a season. Jeff O'Neill, Eric Staal. That's the list. Has not happened in 15 years. Now you got Jake Guentzel. You also added Evgeny Kuznetsov from Washington. Key piece on that Stanley Cup team from about 5 years ago. Great experience, great goal scoring. He could be lethal as well. More importantly, this signals that this team is all in. Carolina, you knew they were pretty good and the expectations there were at the start of the season. Now, unlike last year at the deadline, Carolina's just pushing its chips to the center. The same way they did in 2006 when they won the Cup. 2006, they added Mark Recchi, they added Doug Weight, pushed their chips to the center of the table. And this is reminiscent of that with those types of additions. Plus, if you want to talk about a huge addition around the deadline as well, just not something that you traded for, Freddie Anderson returned to the Nets last night for the first time in over 4 months. And how did he do? He stopped 24 of 25 shots in a 4-1 Carolina win. Here was Rod Brindamore afterwards on the journey for Freddie Anderson when he was unsure whether or not Freddie would come back due to the blood clots he was dealing with. And now that he's back, you have a grade A number one goalie for the stretch run.
That's probably the bigger story, really, is for him. Just, I mean, I'm sure he had, well, I know he had a lot of doubts about just ever even lacing him up again. And, you know, just kind of knock that one out and feel good about whether we won or lost, just getting back out there doing something that obviously he loves to do. And so that was probably the biggest takeaway.
Pretty cool stuff watching that. Carolina already a legit contender before the deadline. Just got better. Watch out for the Canes.
You're on the drive with Josh Graham, WSJS.
Darren Vaught's in studio with us. We get off the air at 6 o'clock. That's the time that Darren Vaught's going on the air for Wake Forest Baseball's ACC opener against Duke. So, Darren, I can't think of a better idea but than people listening to this show to turn on Wake Duke at 6 o'clock.
You're correct. There is not a single idea that would be better. And I'll hear no dispute.
I have a good idea that might be better than that idea right now.
Okay.
As a preview of the shows, of something that we're going to do when we get to D.C. and we get to Charlotte the next couple of weeks for the ACC tournament and NCAA first and second round. Here's a pack of 1992 Topps baseball cards, an unopened pack that you can open up while I tell the people about what's going on at the local YMCA. Sound about good to you? I think
that sound
tells
that
the story.
Like? That's a yes.
So good.
There's a great new program that the YMCA has with sports called the Warrior Sports. They've been doing it basketball, soccer, now basketball for a second season. It's boys and girls ages 8 to 13 who have disabilities. Gives them a chance to learn fundamentals and other aspects, important aspects of youth sports such as character building, teamwork, sportsmanship, and mindset. Space is limited. It's only at the Jerry Long location. And registration is open through March or until it fills up. To learn more about it, ymcanwnc.org. Before we answer unusual questions to give away Wake Forest Duke tickets, what did you get in your pack?
There's some good stuff in here. I saw on the back Todd Van Poppel, which is just an excellent baseball name from that era, the early 90s. I got a Bernie Williams here. And he's running the base paths. He's got like the Dahmer glasses on. You remember when he wore those on the field? He was wearing like the serial killer specs.
Those are outstanding. Yeah.
That's a great photo of Bernie Williams. We got a Pat Borders, World Series MVP Pat Borders, John Kruk, formerly of ESPN.
And John Kruk is how I believe that's pronounced.
The Philadelphia Phillies. I mean, maybe. I don't know. Here's Al Osuna. I wonder if he's related to North Carolina.
I'd love to hear John Kruk do a Richard Nixon impression and say, "I am not a Kruk." Because his name's...
I'm going to look into this. There's a guy, Al Osuna, for the Astros here. He looks to be a pitcher. I wonder if he's related possibly to North Carolina's designated hitter, Alberto Osuna. But we're going to look into that. I think the Bernie Williams is my favorite. That's solid.
Wake Forest baseball ticket giveaways, courtesy of our friends at Jason's Deli in Winston-Salem, right off of Haines Mall Boulevard. Pay them a visit if you want tickets to go see Wake Duke on Sunday, 336-777-1600. All you have to do is call us and ask us an unusual question. It could be sports-related, but it's usually more fun when it's not. Let's answer unusual questions now, though.
Last week, guys, everybody made it out that I got mad at Josh and I left the press conference. That's not right. I thought it was an unusual question, and it's okay.
It's time for Unusual Questions with Josh Graham.
I'm not the only one bringing props into the studio. Darren Vaught is, too. That's an interesting contraption that's sitting next to you.
It's carrying my water.
What is your unusual question of the day?
So this was a promotional item from the Jax Classic, which I called for D1Baseball.com. It's a great water bottle. It's an ice shaker is the brand, and it's got the Jax Classic logo on it. And I've been using it to hydrate throughout the day. Here you go if you want to show it to the good people who are watching.
Ice shaker.
So ice shaker.
Have I heard of that?
As seen on Shark Tank. One of the Gronkowskis came up with the idea, and it is a family venture of the Gronkowskis. Now, they are not the reason why I have this, and I didn't purchase it, But it brings up the question, what's the most ridiculous celebrity-endorsed thing you've ever purchased? Most ridiculous, I'll start. So, like, my example is maybe not the most ridiculous, but it's, like, the one, it's the celebrity endorsement, and I can't say I'm swayed on that sort of thing very often, but it's the one that actually got me to purchase something I otherwise would not have.
Which is?
I was 20 years old, and Steve-O was the front man for these, like, skater shoes. It was a brand called Snow Shoes, S-N-E-A-U-X. I think it quickly went defunct, okay? And I didn't skate, but I was into skater culture, so I wore skate shoes like Vans and things like that. I bought a pair of these Snow Shoes, as endorsed by Steve-O. And there's zero, like, I probably wore them a dozen times, never really wore them in. Got rid of them, was not just, you know, I otherwise would not have purchased them. That's my most, maybe my most shameful celebrity endorsement sway.
That's great. WD?
The one that registers.
You get a few of these. I bet you get a few of these.
Well, see, the one that registers the most for me is like when I was a baseball player, like I would get athletic gear that was endorsed by certain players.
Sure.
I'd like. So I would buy, like, Barry Bonds grip tape because I wanted my wood bat to look like Barry Bonds' bat.
I did when I played soccer.
The batting
Cristiano
gloves.
Ronaldo's Mercurial Vapors that I wore once, like the shoes.
No, those were good. My brother is a soccer player and was, like, a total gearhead. Those were good. Those were good. Good boots.
I did remember watching Tyler Hansbrough's Subaru commercial back in the day. Wow! Made me want to get a Subaru.
I don't remember that.
They only gave him one line. Wow! Wow!
I really wish that as an adult, you were just rocking a Subi because of Tyler Hansbrough.
Great.
Specifically.
That commercial, it was. He swayed me.
Wow!
What's your unusual question, WD?
Is it bad that I forgot it?
Yes.
Yeah, that's horrible. We do it every week.
Josh, you're a professional,
professional
broadcaster.
I had it in my head. Mm-hmm. Josh, you go while I remember it.
I'm dressed in a cotton candy I'm Knuff hoodie right now.
Yeah, you're still wearing that thing, huh?
The Oscars are on Sunday. We're celebrating this. I'm reminded of cotton candy ice cream when I look at myself on this video stream. What's your favorite kind of ice cream?
When you say cotton candy, you mean like the Superman tub?
Yeah. Those things are great.
Is that cotton candy flavored? Is that what that is?
Or when you go to one of these places like Mayberry and Winston or one of these others, you can get cotton candy flavor ice cream. Those are usually a great specialty flavor.
Yeah, see, this reminds me of like the big tub of they call it Superman. It's like it's a pure, there are purer colors, right? Right? It's blue, red, and yellow. Not that that's my favorite, but that's what that reminds me of. I think it's Mayfield that put out a flavor blueberry cream pie.
Oh.
And it's blueberry like a blueberry pie, cheesecake. Like, you know, if you go to Cookout and you get the blueberry cheesecake shake, it's like that in ice cream form in just like a pint size. That's my favorite ice cream flavor.
WD.
Birthday cake.
There you go.
I love birthday cake ice cream.
336-777-1600 if you want in. I'll probably just go basic answer and say cookies and cream.
Sure.
I like a mean cookies and cream. But I was talking with my wife actually about this last night, about ice cream flavors. And she says her favorite type of ice cream flavor is Oreo. And I'm like, wait a minute.
It's
cookies and cream is Oreo. No. It's got to be Oreo brand is what she says.
Or hear me out. You could just get Oreos and vanilla ice cream because that's what that is.
Who are we going to?
We got Beth in Greensboro.
Beth in Greensboro, what's your unusual question?
Hi, Josh.
Hi.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Beth.
You guys are probably too young to know about this type. It's called bubble gum. And they used to have like literally pieces of bubble gum. Oh, are you? Okay.
Yeah, it's so good.
But
why do you like it so much?
It was so cold. It was delicious, though. And it was like blue and pink. And that was one of my favorites, but I love lemon ice cream. That's my 2 cents.
Lemon. See, you and Pete Nance both. Pete Nance had the lemon flavor Oreos that he was all in on. Lemon flavored ice cream. I could see it.
Lemon Oreos is a good flavor.
Good.
I get that.
Good stuff.
So hold on. The bubble gum ice cream. She said it had actual pieces of bubble. Like, I hope Beth wasn't, like, ingesting that.
Yeah.
Yeah, doesn't it take forever to digest
gum? You're not supposed to swallow the bubble gum.
Yeah.
Do you remember your unusual question?
I do.
I'm glad.
Good save.
Well, it's true. Do you have a strategy when it comes to parking? Like, for me, like, I have no problem walking and getting exercise. So I like to park away from other cars.
From the riffraff?
Yeah,
from the clown show that is closest to the doors. Yeah,
I always try to find a spot that I can pull just head on into. Like, if I'm like in a big parking lot, I want to park like all the way through. So like go through a spot and then be facing out already, so I don't have to back up.
The reverse back inner is what you are.
Correct.
Yeah, which I will accept far before the people who needlessly back in and take up time and
show
space
off.
And it's for everybody. Like, we get it. You've got the camera back there.
Exactly what it is.
Cool. I still don't trust my camera, and I've had camera for a year and a half.
I get it. You're not driving a 2010 Corolla that's got 250,000 miles on it. Sweet. Like,
are you driving a 2010 Corolla with 250,000 miles on it?
Not quite. Not quite. We're almost there.
All right.
You get the point. You get the point. No, I don't know. I don't think about it, right?
That's right.
People think too much about stuff like that. If there's an open space, you act. You turn. You pull into the space. You get where you're going. People will, like, circle a lot trying to find the closest spot, and in turn, you lost 5 minutes.
Does Steph Curry think about what shot he's going to hit during the game?
Nope.
No.
Catch
is he
and
open?
Shoot.
That's it.
Catch and shoot. He's always open.
What is the defense giving you? You got
to
take it.
I guess that's fair. I just like to be away from getting dinged up.
I think we can all agree with that. And that's been Unusual Questions.
Who wants to get dinged up?
Get away from
nobody.
It.
Nobody.
Coming up, an elite pitching matchup to open up ACC play, and it's about time we start paying attention to the mid-majors in our state here on a Friday Drive.
Now he's done. It's time once again.
Now back to the Drive with Josh Graham.
A couple finals at the ACC Women's Basketball Tournament in Greensboro. It looked like Notre Dame was going to beat Louisville in a walk, a matchup between two ranked teams, but Louisville makes it competitive, Notre Dame winning by 9, 77-68. And this one, just about in the books, it's now in the books, Virginia Tech 55, Miami 47. No Elizabeth Kitley in the lineup, the three-time ACC Player of the Year. Not wearing any brace or boot or anything like that, but watching on not playing today, number 11 Virginia Tech beats Miami again by 8 points, but nothing from the Summerfield native. Of course, you have Duke NC State, 5 o'clock tip, 10th ranked NC State facing the Blue Devils, Carol Lawson's team that won last night, Syracuse facing Florida State is the nightcap in Greensboro. Darren Vaught's in studio with us. Darren, before we get to the game that you're going to be calling in a couple of hours, it's time to pay attention to our state's mid-majors. High Point, Big South Tournament. Their action starts tonight. They're the top seed in the Big South Tournament. It's being hosted in their building at the Q. High Point, one of two in-state programs to never make an NCAA tournament, joining Elon as the D1 program. Your Elon Phoenix. Your High Point Panthers, since you call a lot of High Point in addition to ECU basketball. That's where we need to begin when talking about it's not just the big boys to be paying attention to this weekend. You got to keep an eye on the Panthers because that's a great story.
Yeah, and they got Radford earlier today with a victory.
That's already done.
It's in the books.
Oh, I knew that they started on Friday. I didn't know a tip time.
Yep,
so
they tipped.
Congratulations to High Point for a win today. They're next in action tomorrow.
So it was a little hairy. Radford got off to an 18-4 start.
The Highlanders.
So that was a 14-point deficit relatively early. I think that was the first media timeout. High Point ended up winning by like 13. They brought it to a 2-point deficit at halftime. High Point had, I think, one assist in the first half and still only trailed by a bucket. Like, they just when they need ISO buckets, they got dudes who can get ISO buckets. Their freshman 7-footer, Jocelyn Bodo Bodo, tied the Big South tournament single game record for rebounds. He got his 19th with about 30 seconds to go in that game. Like, they just got, they got dudes. So yeah, no, I mean, they're a dangerous team. I was at the Holmes Center in Boone when App State wrapped up their undefeated home schedule and their regular season Sun Belt Championship too. Really impressed with them.
So tomorrow, App State will open up in Pensacola. They're lobbying, and Dustin Kearns was with us last week, they're lobbying for two-bid Sun Belt. And in order for that to happen, given how the metrics are looking right now, even though App State's beaten JMU twice already, it would be best for the conference, they'd be best set up, if App State, rather than JMU, were the conference champs.
Yeah.
JMU can just say, well, we've lost to a couple of teams this year, and the teams that we lost to, one of them we lost three times to App State, and they're in the tournament for a reason. They're in consideration, according to Joe Lenardi's most recent bracketology today. So App State, Sun Belt action in Pensacola tomorrow. Two others I'll throw out there, Charlotte and UNCW. Both are top three in the standings in their respective conferences. Charlotte in the American, you got a chance to see them calling ECU basketball. UNCW in the CAA, watch out for the Seahawks.
Yeah, and Charlotte plays at ECU tomorrow, so I'll be in Greenville for that. It's senior night for ECU. Interested to see, like, the, ever since they extended, is it Ray Fern? What is his name? Fern, mm-hmm. The head coach who was the interim and got the
interim tag taken off.
Yeah, interim tag is taken off. They've not played as well. I think that's mostly coincidence because they've just run into some good teams. I like South Florida a lot. Speaking of,
they've only lost one conference game this year.
Yeah, I like South Florida a lot. Florida Atlantic.
Did you go to USF this year?
No, they played.
That's a fun building.
They played at Minji's, but we did not go there this year. Florida Atlantic is, you know, came in as one of the favorites. I think they're good. Memphis has come in as one of the favorites, fallen off the face of the earth, and now is on this absolute heater. And I have a hard time not imagining they're going to win the conference tournament, but just because they've played so well as of late. There are a lot of interesting storylines in the American, so we'll see. ECU's pretty much a lock to be in the 8-9 matchup. Likely going to play Tulsa, who they beat in the one matchup with them this year. So we'll see how the Pirates do. But, it's going to be an interesting week in Fort Worth.
6 o'clock start, Wake baseball facing Duke, ESPN+. You can watch Darren Vaught then. He's got the ACC Network polo on right now for those who could see.
Doing a job here.
On YouTube, Twitch, and on X. Tell me about this pitching matchup. What excites you so much about what we see tonight?
I mean, it's two probable top 10 picks in Duke's Jonathan Santucci and Wake Forest's Josh Hartle. They're successful in completely different ways. Santucci is a fastball slider guy, and his game is wiping you out with that and getting strikeouts. Josh Hartle is like your quintessential five-pitch mix. He projects so easily to be a major league starting pitcher, and he's going to be all over the zone. He's just really tough to hit hard. So they do it two completely different ways. It's two of the guys who do it better than anyone in the country. Couple of really good left-handers, and obviously the teams outside of their starting pitchers are really good too. This is the series of the week in college baseball.
What does that mean? Are there going to be a lot of people, scouts, a lot of people in
town? I was told earlier this week by multiple people from Wake Forest that the scouting credentials requests were even higher than usual than they've been. And I mean, you know, if you've paid any attention to Wake Forest baseball over the past 2 years, you know, the place is crawling with scouts basically every weekend. So I was told scouting credentials were even higher, in even higher demand than usual. So, I mean, it's going to be buzzy. I know half the D1 baseball crew is going to be there tonight for that game. So it's going to feel big time. It's going to be fun. So I just hope it lives up to the hype.
Yeah. I hope our mid-majors, going back to them, they live up to the hype, because I'm starting to do the math in my head. And we'll talk about bracketology when Mike DeCourcy joins us. But how many in-state teams are going to make the tournament? You have Duke and Carolina. Let's assume the top seeds take care of business, High Point and App State. That's four. And then you look at it. Can Wake Forest get hot and get into the tournament? Can either Charlotte or UNCW win as three seeds? Like, I think there's a chance you can get to five NCAA tournament teams from the state of North Carolina this year.
Yeah, I could see it. Again, the American's been wild, man. Like, Charlotte's certainly got a chance. I like UNCW, too. I mean, they played at Minji's earlier in the season.
Man,
so
you
I got
hit
to
that
see
W
them.
Hard.
I always do. You have to. You have to, man.
I'm coming in lazy saying UNCW, and then you come in with
W. You have to. Dude, when I was doing college radio.
This used to be a thing that, like, radio execs would interview and ask you, like, how do you say the letter W?
Yeah.
And people wanted to get jobs because of that letter.
It was beaten into my brain that I was doing games not on WEHC.
I don't say W.
No. I'm just saying that's how it was.
There's a range here, Darren.
There is. There's a spectrum that we're on. I'm just at the W far end here, and you're somewhere in the middle in a normal place.
It's not okay to say a hard R. It is okay to say a hard W. Okay? Let's start there. The hard W is acceptable, but it's noticeable. And it's aggressive. You weren't ready for the hard W, were you?
I love a hard W, if we're being honest.
See, like, all right, say WD.
Say it.
WD.
WD!
That's how Ian Eagle said it, too.
WD.
Yeah.
Do we have that drop? Because Ian Eagle does strike me as someone who will say a hard W when talking about...
Because the guy's a pro. Like I said, I'm doing a job here.
Let's hear it.
I don't have it. It's WD needs to watch a thinking man's picture.
We'll get to that in the big four. Thanks for being here, Darren.
Of course. See you guys.
The perfect guest for today is the Sporting News Hall of Fame sports writer, Mike DeCourcy. The man does bracketology. Just today, he was writing about the ACC and the net. Check my Twitter or TSN Mike on Twitter to find that quickly. And ahead of the Oscars Sunday, he's a big movie nerd, as am I. Mike joins us now. Mike, you're speaking largely to an ACC audience that is fearing four, possibly three bids for the NCAA tournament. Amid all the complaints about the net that you've heard from coaches and from fans that you wrote about in your column, would a number that small be justified to you?
It could be justified. It depends on what transpires in the ACC and elsewhere over the next 12 days, or not 12 days, 9 days, I should say. It depends on what happens relative to Virginia, relative to Wake Forest, relative to Pitt, and relative to a dozen or more other teams out there that are in similar circumstances. There's no magic number. There's no magic victory. Everybody wants there to be, okay, how many games do we need to win in the ACC tournament to get in? Well, if you're in that situation, then the best answer to that question is all of them. Is that Carolina's not asking how many games they need to win to get in. So if you're asking that question, there is no definitive answer other than however many games are required for you to win the ACC tournament.
I agree with you. I think that's very well put in the context of Wake Forest, for example, after it loses at home against Georgia Tech, because now it doesn't seem there isn't any path short of winning the ACC tournament that you're going to feel comfortable on Selection Sunday. But the one that I will push back on a little bit is Virginia, because I believe if they win at home against Georgia Tech, and that should happen, then they should be good, because that is a team that you should want to reward for playing an out-of-conference schedule the way that they did and beating Florida and A&M by double digits and scheduling teams that are good. Some will relate it to Clemson and Wake Forest the last couple of years, but what those two had in common were they didn't play anybody out of conference, and in Clemson's case, they lost to a bad Loyola Chicago team a year ago. Virginia, yes, they've been blown out, but they've been blown out by good teams largely. So I think Virginia should be solidly in if they win on Saturday. What say you?
I personally don't believe in rewarding teams for playing good out-of-conference schedules. I believe in rewarding teams for winning. If we want to reward teams for playing great out-of-conference schedules, Michigan, man, they're 8-23, but they played the number one schedule in the country. There's schedule strength in every metric we look at, whether it's the predictive metrics, KenPom net, BPI, or the results metrics, KPI, strength of record. There's schedule strength in all of them. So how did you do against the schedule? Whether you look at it just in terms of the results on the paper, you lost to Memphis by 100 and you beat Florida, or you look at the numbers that encapsulate all those things, it all adds up to what did you achieve? And I'm not saying that Virginia can't be in or won't be in great shape, but they're one of my last teams in. Right now, and Georgia Tech doesn't change the math on that. Georgia Tech just keeps you from, if you beat them, it just keeps you from getting eliminated or damaged by not beating Georgia Tech. So I don't think there's any security in that. Their resume has some terrific marks and it has some bad marks. And I if you look at the consensus, I'm not alone in putting Virginia in that grouping. I don't think there's any more enthusiasm in the broader, listen to me, the broader bracket community than I express. So I think that Virginia would do very well for itself to take out Georgia Tech and then at least one or two of whoever's placed in front of them when they get to D.C.
Tony Bennett is very polished, usually has a good answer to everything. Last week at Cameron, the question I asked him was, you're going to likely be a 3 seed in the ACC, deemed so good that you don't play Tuesday and Wednesday in this conference. And yet there are some saying you shouldn't make the tournament, despite the fact you're the third best team in this conference by standings, 13-7, who you beat, and then some out of conference wins. That makes my head explode, but I know you'll tell me the historical perspective outside the ACC of this is it happens, just ask the Big Ten in 2018, probably.
Exactly. That was exactly where I was going.
Hey,
there you go. 2018, the Big Ten gets 4 teams in, and I will tell you the scenario on like February 1st, whatever the Sunday was, like right at the beginning of February. I'm on Big Ten Basketball and Beyond, and we are discussing Nebraska's chances, and they put the schedule up in a full screen graphic, and I'm like, uh-oh. It doesn't look like there's enough wins out there. There's enough wins out there, but there's enough good wins in the league for Nebraska to build a resume. They're going to have to go to the conference tournament and do something. And they wound up in a 4-5 game against Michigan, which was the 5, had to win the prior day. And they played Michigan on a quarterfinal Friday. And it was a fabulous game, but Michigan won. And I walked into Nebraska's locker room, and I am telling you, it was so quiet in that room. It was as if the noise was being vacuumed out. I've never been in a quieter locker room in 40 years in the business. They knew that they needed that game and they didn't get it. And, you know, I hope Virginia doesn't wind up in that spot. I hope Pitt doesn't wind up in that spot because it's a terrible spot to be. But the reason they're in that spot or potentially in that spot is that they've played the way they have to this point in the season. And they've done it in a conference that is not achieving at the level that historically it has.
Who intrigued? Mike DeCourcy's with us here. Sporting News. Read his story on the ACC, the net, going into the last weekend of the regular season on the Sporting News' website. Of course, Mike and myself's social media page from the day on Twitter. Who most intrigues you more heading into the postseason, Duke or Carolina?
Well, I think Carolina does, because if I look at those two teams, I think that they're both terrific. I think that each of them has the goods to get to the Final Four. But I think Carolina is the one of the two that has the goods to win the national championship. Hmm. If Duke does it, and I'm not saying it's impossible because they have a lot of the components you need, very good point guard play, pro level talent, some really good wings. They've got their defense tightened up, but they don't protect the rim. It's something that I noticed early on against Arkansas that it was statistically, it's not a surprise, but I noticed it early on against Arkansas. I saw it come back again against Pitt. They can't protect the rim. They don't have that player.
They don't have Derek Lively.
That player's in the NBA.
Yeah, Derek Lively.
Yeah, exactly. And so if they had that guy or someone like that, they're a great national championship contender because they've got the point guard, the wings, the NBA talent, can shoot the heck out of it. They got everything they need except that. And
to hold you up, do you have a criteria? Like when you're saying this is what an NCAA tournament contender is. Checking boxes, rim protectors, how high up on that list? How many things are on this list?
It's not super high, but it's on the list. And you won't find many champions that don't have, NBA talent, first round picks. Haven't had one since 87. Haven't had that. And when I say NBA talent, I'm not just talking about guys who can make the league and be on a team. I'm talking about guys who are going to get picked in the first round.
Well, you say first round since 87. Obviously, it's a lot bigger first round now today than it was in 87. If you want to find the last time a player won, a team had didn't have a player picked in the first 30 picks, let's call it, you'll have to go back to the 40s to find the last time that happened. So, yeah,
but
I think that's a pretty big requirement.
Basketball was different
but,
then.
But let me ask you this question. Let me ask you this question in that regard.
Yeah.
Who do you see on this Carolina team that would be a first-round draft pick?
Cadeau will be a first-round draft pick.
This year?
It doesn't have to be this year.
Oh, sure. Okay.
But he will be. That's the player that will be that player.
Okay.
And that's why they have the chance, because then you add in, you've got point guard play, you got leadership, you've got wings on that team. Maybe not at your obviously RJ isn't the prototypical wing, but you've got an oversized point guard.
Yeah.
You have to have the rim protection I talked about. You have to be top 20 in offense and defense. That's why Kentucky. I mean, like I was talking on someone else's show on a betting site, and I'm like, and Kentucky's like 35-1, and I said you can make a lot of money on them. Just don't bet a lot because there's a very good chance it doesn't cash because no one has ever won with the defense at their level. Not during the KenPom era, last 20, 25 years. No one's won it with that defense. But Duke has gotten the defense up to where it can contend. Just that last little thing about the lack of shot blocking worries me. I look at Duke, and like I said, if you gave me a Derek Lively or someone half as good as Derek Lively who would be worthy of minutes on this team, I think that you would have a great contender.
Well, I'll have you watch somebody very closely tomorrow amid all the college basketball that I'm sure you're going to be watching. Mike DeCourcy here. Sean Stewart nearly gets a double-double Monday. And what it reminds me of, if Duke's going to make the run that you're talking about, it's so aptly the way you put it. They need this, and this guy maybe has that potential to do it. It is very reminiscent of 2010 where John Shire, makes the run, but Brian Zubek was not a key guy until February. And 2015, Rashid Suleiman gets dismissed off the team, and also in Indianapolis, that opens the door for Grayson Allen, who has the moment against Wisconsin. And we don't know what would have happened in 2020, but the Admiral's son, Justin Robinson, not a key guy in January, but in February, big, big month, and he was great against North Carolina in what turned out to be the final game of Duke's season at Cameron on senior night. So for Duke to reach its ceiling, I guess they kind of need that from that guy late in the season.
Yeah, I watched them. I've watched so many games.
NC State on Monday night?
Yeah, it was NC State. Yeah, he was fabulous. And that's what they are going to need. And it's not, like you said, it's not unprecedented for someone to come in and make a difference in March that hasn't been a major contributor through the year. They have to have the ability and the opportunity. And I do think that for Duke to win it all, they're probably going to need to create the opportunity for Sean to get him enough minutes that he can be there. On those days when someone like Jalen Lowe of Pitt was getting to the rim almost at will earlier in February, someone to get back there and say, no, you're not. And I was really impressed in the NC State game by his defense. And I could certainly see him maybe making that a non-issue.
Mike DeCourcy with us here, getting to the movies. Remind me, did you watch all the Best Picture noms? Do you rank these?
Yes, as a matter of fact, every year on Facebook, I do a post ranking them from one to whatever. I have seen all the Best Picture nominees every year for the last 40 years, going back to 1985, I believe it is. The last 40 Oscars.
I love it. What was your top two this year, let's call it, without going through the top list?
Yes, it was Barbenheimer. It was Oppenheimer number one and Barbie number two.
Let's go.
Oppenheimer was, I will say, yeah, I mean, I'm not, I do read a lot about World War II history, but I'd never read a book about the making of the bomb or any of that. And so there was lots of the Oppenheimer story. I had no idea happened.
And so much was accurate too. Pretty much all of it.
Yeah, I haven't heard any historical complaints about it, but I did not know about chapter two, so to speak. And I thought they handled that all really well. Obviously, Cillian Murphy was phenomenal. Robert Downey Jr. was terrific. The cast was great. And then number two, Barbie. You know, I thought that I didn't think I'd ever see a movie as inventive as Everything Everywhere All at Once, which won a year ago, deservedly. Barbie was really close.
Not an original screenplay nom, which is stupid. They say, oh, well,
it's adapted because
it's adapted. It's adapted because Barbie boxes. I don't know. That's what it is. It's an adapted screenplay. Why? I don't know.
I know. It's unbelievable. But at least it got nominated for that. It didn't get nominated for Best Director when it's not entirely a director's picture, but there's so much vision from Greta Gerwig there. And then Margot Robbie's unbelievable performance, just perfect. It wouldn't have worked without that.
So you think it's a Margot Robbie movie before a Ryan Gosling movie?
100%. I knew coming out of the theater when I'd heard so much about Gosling and so little about how perfectly she performed, I kind of had a feeling that something like this was going to happen relative to her. But it's a shame that it did, because she certainly warranted a nomination. Her performance was pitch perfect.
Those
were the top two, but it was a great year, yeah. Josh. The best year of this century for movies, in my estimation.
Better than 07 with No Country and There Will Be Blood?
Yes.
Wow.
Absolutely.
That's quite a comment.
Because you go down to the 10, and I on my post, I pointed out I didn't like at all. I didn't like Maestro. I thought it was really self-indulgent.
Same.
And I didn't like
Poor Things.
Poor Things.
I watched that last night.
Yeah, those two were not worthy of Oscar nominations. But, I mean, I'm down to 6 or 7, 8. I'm down to 7, I think, and I'm thinking this could win in a lot of years, this picture. Past Lives was just a wonderful story.
That's the one that everyone's been telling me about that I have not seen out of the three or four I have left that I most want to see. I might see
Precious
it by Sunday night.
Precious love story that I can remember seeing. It goes overly quiet at times, like almost to make a point. And that bothered me a teeny bit, but it's such a fresh story and beautifully acted and beautifully written. I really loved it. I loved Anatomy of a Fall. If you haven't seen that yet, I think you can get it on some of the streaming services.
Zone of Interest or Anatomy of a Fall? Which one's the one about living amongst Nazis?
That is the one that's called
Zone of Interest.
The Zone of Interest.
Yeah.
And I really appreciated the idea behind it. I thought that it really just the story wasn't extensive enough.
I heard there wasn't a story at all. It just kind of like builds tension. That's kind of it.
That's the way I felt about it, was that there needed to be a little bit more of that. But the ideas that they had were phenomenal. Anatomy of Fall is about it's sort of a murder mystery. And it's a courtroom drama and a portrait of a falling apart marriage all at the same time. And it's really well done. It's a movie, interestingly, I thought it was entirely a foreign language film. There's a lot of English, so you're going to have to spend about half your time reading subtitles, but there's a lot of English, so it's not a 2.5-hour subtitle reading movie. Not that I'm against that, but it does lighten the load for you a little bit.
Mike DeCourcy, we'll enjoy the basketball, and then we'll enjoy the Oscars on Sunday night. Thanks for making the time for us, as always. Happy March to you.
My pleasure, Josh. Anytime for you.